Hey everyone, quick note here at the beginning of the episode. I just want to point out that at some point, Jay's microphone starts sounding really, really terrible, and we do eventually address that and fix it. So if it starts sounding horrible, just bear with us, or if you can't bear with us, then skip forward a few minutes and it eventually gets better. But I just wanted to give that heads up so you aren't instantly turned off when you hear how bad his mic starts sounding at about, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes in. What was that? Sorry to
interrupt. What? You got nothing, Robert.
Hello, everybody. This is May 31st. I got things out of order this time. This is the Classic Gaming Podcast. This is, episode 162 of the Classic Gaming Podcast. Today's episode is May 31st, 2021. We're doing kind of an impromptu episode this time because we just realized that that Jay has things going on tonight. And then after tonight, he has things going on for the next like month, pretty much. By things, I mean WoW. So, Jay, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I feel like that was a little bit of a jab. I'm not gonna lie. I feel a little offended.
That is not a jab.
I'm just
being just shooting it straight. Sometimes games come up and you have to devote your entire life to them, and I totally understand that.
Yep. I was thinking about this morning. It's kind of like a bender. Like it's like what's nice too is I'm off work for the next through next week. So it's also nice.
Are you off because of WoW?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, yeah, 100%. So, okay. It's I'm really excited. Obviously, today being Monday, tomorrow it goes live. So, well, I say it goes live tomorrow, but we'll see. It probably won't go up tomorrow. I think it'll probably be the following day if I had to guess for sure.
So, is this an expansion for Classic?
Yeah, it's the first expansion for Classic, which was, it's called the Burning Crusade. It's the first expansion that came out. Came out in like 2007, so this is a re-release of 14 years later.
Okay,
it's really exciting. We have we formed a guild. I'm actually leading a guild, which is pretty fun. And we have 24 people. We need 25 total. We have 24 people, and of the 24, 17 I know really well. It's people that I hang out with that all kind of came together. So even regardless of anything, I'm really excited just to spend time with everybody and clear through content, talk to everybody. And this week we're gonna go super hard. So. It's going to be fun.
I'm in your Discord.
I know. Pretty exciting, right?
It's super exciting.
People are super hyped right now, so.
Nice. So quick note to our listeners, we're going to be a little shorter than usual this time. If we sound like we're speeding things along at any point, it's because Jay has to head out in about an hour and a half. But I don't think we're going to have to really, skip too much stuff that we normally would have talked about because there's almost no news. We've only got two emails, and then since we're not doing top fives anymore, obviously that cuts that section out. So we might not even really lose out on anything. So I just might talk about maybe like one game less than I would have otherwise.
Yeah, but, and I just want to. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Robert.
No, I was trying to think of a segue. So you talk.
You're good. I was just going to say, and it doesn't have to do with games or anything. Today being Memorial Day, I'm going to spend some time with my family. My family decided to do a party because my sister had her first kid this year, and all of our families are kind of getting together. And, you probably don't know this yet. Lisa and I got married like a week, a little over a week ago, a week from last Friday.
No, you didn't.
I swear to God.
You did. You've told me this. One time, a long time ago, you said, we're engaged.
I told you we were engaged?
Yeah, it's like eight years ago or something like that.
I think I probably meant it like we more or less might as well be engaged. Because like Lisa and I have just, we don't
know. No, you put it on, you said it to like a whole group of people and then you were like, just kidding or something like that. After a couple hours. Okay.
I was going to say it because that doesn't sound like me, but also that could have been past me. But no, Lisa and I went and got married a little over a week ago.
Did you actually?
I swear to God, okay. I can show you the marriage certificate. I can show you the pictures.
Yeah, I'll please. Yeah, here. I'm gonna need you to email me those.
Yeah, do I send it to Class Games?
Yeah, mail at classicgamepodcast.com.
you like that? No, so that's part of it too. Is just spending some time with my family and just kind of celebrating a little bit. So,
Did y'all like just do like a courthouse wedding? Like, you gotta tell me, first off, why the fuck didn't you tell me about this in the first place? How am I just learning about this right now?
I'm sorry.
One of my best friends got fucking married.
Oh, Robert, you're so nice. Right, why you gotta make me blush like that? No, honestly, we've kept it pretty low key for a long time, and I don't really like talking about myself too much, especially when it comes to things like that. It's just I don't know. I just don't really like being like the center of attention for things. So I haven't really told like an extensive amount of people. Yeah, so I mean, honestly, like most of the people we hang out in Discord, most of them don't even know. okay. I just really haven't said anything to anybody. It's just I don't know. I just don't really like brag about. Like I don't know. It's not bragging, but I feel like it is. So that's just kind of where my perspective is. I know, but it's just kind of where my head is at. So, yeah. Sorry. Well, now you know. Now everybody knows.
So did you? I'm sorry. I missed. Did you say you did do a courthouse wedding or like marriage, or did you just have like a small? Did you do any sort of ceremony?
We just did it at the courthouse. We're gonna do like a small reception in July because my younger brother lives in Texas and he'll be here for like a month. So during that time, we're gonna do some form of reception. Nothing crazy. We're just gonna get have barbecue, hang out in my parents' backyard, and just you know eat food and talk and stuff. Nothing.
When are you doing that? Do you know when in July?
July. I don't know. I think July 2nd, something around that. I think we have the date confirmed. I can find out and let you know.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're having a bunch of people, if this is not just a family thing, I would be happy to fly down for that.
It actually will be.
It's just family thing. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I should have clarified that. Yeah, it's literally going to be Lisa's family and my family.
Oh, okay.
Like a total. Like,
I don't want to come to that.
I appreciate the offer, though. I mean, and if you're ever in town again, I'd be love to go get dinner or you know whatever. We could go to an arcade and.
Dude, we're gonna do more than just get dinner if I come to town.
That's true. Listen, you gotta start somewhere. but yeah, so that's part of the reason why for today as well is just you know just kind of celebrating and hanging out and stuff. So
when did this happen again? You said a couple weeks ago.
It was the 21st, so a week from last Friday.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were kind of teaming with her for a while. Thank you. Yeah, we were kind of teaming her for a little while, and then things kind of lined up, and we set a date, and then started talking to with my family. It was really funny. Initially, we were just going to go get eloped, and then just apologize to our families afterwards, and they didn't take that too well. So we had to negotiate. I kept telling people we were negotiating with terrorists because it was a lot of back and forth. But I will say, my family was very respectful, and I appreciate them very much for it because they could have been really like over the top, and they weren't. And neither was Lisa's family. So
they weren't over the top, like angry. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
They weren't over the top with like with demands. Like my dad wanted to be at the reception, at the actual ceremony. Like it was really minor stuff at first. They're like, "Well, can we give speeches and like all the stuff?" And Lisa and I like, "No, none of that. Like we're not doing rings. We're not doing like you know super crazy dress attire. Like Lisa and I wore clothes that we had. Like we didn't want to do anything super extensive or costly, just because." We just don't really care that much. So my family was really cool about it, and I appreciate them for it.
Well, did y'all ever... Had y'all always planned on eventually getting married? Because I never really asked, because... I mean, I don't want to pry too much, but I always just assumed that you weren't planning on getting married ever, but you... Like, that y'all were going to stay together, but just not get married. Was that...
Yeah, that's a factual statement. Yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, so we initially were not planning to for a long time, but Lisa, for those who don't know, she's a really talented writer. She graduated college with an English degree, and she is looking to actually quit her job and start writing at the end of this year. She's planning to just quit and just write full time. So
oh, cool.
So part of the thing is just so we can lock our finances in, and as well so that she can get on my insurance. Which I've heard we can potentially do that without being married as well, but you know, so be it. So we just kind of want to get that done, as well as we're probably going to buy a house together in the near future. So okay. I'm not really keen on buying a house with somebody unless there's some form of contract in place. And it just seems like the logical thing to do for it. So.
Okay.
A lot of logical stuff, not really a whole lot of
this
like,
is, I feel like yeah. I still have like 100 questions to ask.
Oh, ask away.
I don't know what they are though.
No, you can ask me anytime. I'm very comfortable talking about it. So,
that's awesome. That's great. That's crazy. That's awesome. That's nuts.
Thanks.
And that's great.
Yeah, we're very excited.
Well, I guess that's it for this episode
of the Marriage Gaming Podcast.
I don't know where to go from here. We can talk about Icewind Dale.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Well, are we talking about Icewind Dale? Oh, I guess we could.
No. We're not going to. But what we do need to say is that we've changed our game of the quarter. To Icewind Dale 2. We decided, well, Yes, we decided that Guild Wars wasn't going to work out with this new, for the same reason that we're not going to be able to record tomorrow, because the new WoW expansion is coming out, and Jay didn't really think he would have time to put towards another MMO, which is probably good thinking. So we have changed our game of the quarter, which is also happens to be the next episode from now. It is going to be Icewind Dale 2. So if you want to get in on that, then play Icewind Dale 2. Maybe, do you think, I don't know, Jay, what do you think? Do you think when it's your time to pick again, do you think you'll go back to Guild Wars, or you think you're just going to
pick probably. At some point I do want to play with you. I think it'd be really fun to play together, because it's a really challenging MMO. Like, I really appreciate it. And it's very PvE driven. So I don't know how playable it is right now, just kind of given that I imagine the servers are, pretty dead. But I think it'd be, at some point, as of right now, I would think so. But, you know, that could change, obviously.
So we might still do Guild Wars in the future. Yeah. But as of for now, the current game of the quarter, which we will be discussing the next episode after this one, is Icewind Dale 2. I think you and I have both put a few hours into it.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't want to talk about it yet, because I want to save that for next time. But both of us are enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably the right thing to say. Yeah, and if anybody did purchase Guild Wars, let us know. Obviously, we can schedule that as our next game of the quarter, just to be fair.
Yeah, Jay will definitely pay you back for it.
Yeah, with our sponsorship money with Monster.
Monster.
but Icewind Dale, yeah, it is. I believe it's on sale, or was on sale, for like $5 or $10 as of like a couple days ago. So I think I purchased it on GOG instead of Steam now. I started buying more things on GOG than Steam as much as I can.
Yeah.
I am getting so... Steam is just driving me nuts, man. Like, there's some really annoying things about it. I don't know. It's just, like, certain times when I go on there, like, there I just have, like, challenges, like, trying to get into my account. And then when I try to download games, like, sometimes they don't work, especially if I'm in, like, offline mode. Because I play a lot of older games on my media PC now. Steam's not a big fan of you being offline, which everybody knows. But GOG is, like, so on board with it. GOG's like, oh, if you want to play offline, you know, it's... What is it, like, DRM free? I think is what it's called.
Yeah, but I don't usually have a problem with Steam either. I just, like, it'll try to connect the first time, and then I'm like, no, just go to offline mode, and then it does it with no problem.
Sometimes mine works fine, and then other times it's like, oh, I have to do an update, or it's like, hey, you haven't connected in a couple days, like, reconnect or whatever, and I'm like, okay, really? Like, not a huge deal, but it's my media PC, which I don't keep constantly connected to the internet, especially right now, because I'm, like, swapping the Wi-Fi card in and out of it, but it's not like a huge ordeal, but it's just, I really love GOG. Like, I just have no complaints with GOG. It's actually crazy.
Yeah, I tend to prefer GOG, but for my use, I don't ever really have a problem with Steam. But
I got you.
I do like GOG, because you can just download the install files, and I do like that. Mm-hmm. I was about to say.
Yeah, play Icewind Dale, by the way. I think it's going to be a pretty lengthy topic when we talk about it next week. I encourage anybody.
Well, not next week. Podcast. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I encourage you guys. Definitely worthwhile to look at. It's an incredible game. So far, so
yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I want to say more, but I don't want to. But I'm not going to say more than that. All right, sweet. Okay, so for news, one thing I do have to tell you about. So Final Fantasy 14, mm-hmm. they had like a big, I don't even know what it was called. Like,
event.
Huh?
Event.
Kind of, yeah. It was like I don't think it was like a fan festival. It was okay, here it is. It was called the Digital... Okay, it is a fan festival. Digital Fan Festival. I didn't watch any of it. I just, like, kind of kept up, not even closely, but kept up with a little bit of the news that came out of it. And so this was around the middle of this month, so about 2 weeks ago they had it. One of the things they announced is a... Final Fantasy 14 guitar.
Excuse me?
Final Fantasy 14 Fender Stratocaster, if you know anything about guitars. It's a kind of a classic... That's like one of the more popular, like... It's like a classic guitar. I own one. Just about everybody who plays guitar eventually seems to own one. Hold on, let me find it. I'm going to show you it. It's coming out, like, at the end of this year, I think.
Is this just, like, a promotional thing to promote the game? Is that the idea?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just... I mean, I guess. I don't know what the whole thought behind it is, but occasionally Fender, they did this with, Fender made an Evangelion guitar last year. It's the Japanese arm of Fender that does this. And so they're not new to like kind of doing these collaborations.
Okay.
So here I'm going to show this to you. I'm here to tell you, Jay, this guitar, I'm putting it in our chat. It's actually badass.
Are you going to buy it or?
I don't know. I'm like,
it's gotta be stupid expensive. Right?
I'm actually considering it. I'm sure it's stupid expensive.
Oh, that is really cool. But I thought it was gonna look super like weeby.
I did too. I thought it was going to like say Final Fantasy on it in big letters.
Ooh, I like the corners glowing.
That's the corners are it's a black guitar. In one of the corners of the body, it's kind of like translucent blue, sort of like a crystally blue kind of. And then on another corner, on one of the cutaways, it's that same kind of look, but it's purple instead. And then the only other thing it has on it that's kind of like different is on the 12th fret, where usually there's a large fret marker there to kind of show you where it is. It's the Final Fantasy 14 symbol, which again doesn't say anything about Final Fantasy 14. It's just kind of like a fireball looking symbol.
Yeah, it doesn't scream that it's Final Fantasy. I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah, if you didn't know, like honestly, I don't even, if I had seen this without knowing, I might not have noticed.
Yeah.
Because like the Final Fantasy 14 symbol is not something that you see all over the game or like all over even the launcher or anything like that. So if I had seen this, it might have taken me a second to be like, where do I know that symbol from? Oh yeah, Final Fantasy 14. So it doesn't actually say Final Fantasy on it. Even if you're familiar with the game, you might not recognize it. And otherwise, it just kind of looks really cool, I think. So I think they actually did a really good job with this because it's something that, again, doesn't just say like Final Fantasy 14. Like I've seen watches. Occasionally I'll get an email and it's like, check out the new Final Fantasy watch from Square.
No,
yeah. First off, I'm like, no, thank you. Second off, I'm like, well, let me see it. And then it's just a watch that says like Final Fantasy 7 remake, you know, or something dumb like that on it. And
it's just a sticker on top of a regular watch.
Yeah, pretty much. But this actually looks super cool, I think. So that's just a funny kind of random bit of news that was surprisingly awesome that came out of that.
Yeah, 100%. That's super cool.
Okay, let's talk about the games we've been playing. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We got to talk about news first. Man, I'm all messed up.
Are you caffeinated today?
Huh?
Are you caffeinated?
I am. I just finished some green tea.
Oh, they're going to say Monster Energy, our sponsor.
Oh, sorry. It was the green tea flavored Monster Energy drink is what I was saying.
Somebody sent me this video where this guy drinks 4,000 milligrams of caffeine. And then
I saw that. I saw that in the Discord, right?
Yeah. I got to look at this. Like, what is going on with this?
Yeah. I could have told you what was going to happen. You shat your ass off on the toilet and felt terrible for a day. Like that's anybody could have told you what's going to happen.
What's funny is like, I react in a much more minor circumstance, but the same symptoms that guy was experiencing when I drink a decent amount of caffeine, not anymore. Cause I don't drink much caffeine, but when I was, it's like certain days I would just be like, that's exactly how it feels. So I'm like, wow, that's all it was, just amplified up, you know,
by like
200 times or whatever, 500.
Yeah, 200 times. Yeah, that's the that's honestly an idiotic thing to do. It's like one step down from eating Tide Pods.
Oh, I watched some guy eat 32 Big Macs this week, by the way. The guy, he has the world record for the most, he actually set the record again for the most Big Macs eaten in one sitting, 32.
32, that's pretty good.
I think in less than hours, like 45 minutes or something.
I would rather do that than
today because of that.
For lunch today, my daughter and I had a contest to see who could eat a tater tot the fastest.
A tater tot, that's awesome.
I think
Did you win?
So she went once and then I beat her time and then we did a couple more times and she actually ended up with the fastest time. It was like 3.4 seconds or something like that before she swallowed. I think mine was like 3.9 seconds.
Robert, you got to get those numbers up.
I know. I do. I was honestly put to shame. I'm afraid to. I'm going to edit this out of the podcast, actually. Real news. Switch. New Switch games for the... not new Switch games, but new games for Switch Online, the NES and Super Nintendo Switch Online thing. And they are... I forgot to have it pulled up. Please forgive me. Oh, please don't say. Okay, here we go. Joe and Mac. Spanky's Quest. Baseball Simulator. I assume this is Baseball Simulator 1000, but it's written in like the European way where they use a dot instead of a comma, so it looks like it's just Baseball Simulator 1.000. Or sorry, Super Baseball Simulator, forgive me. This game I actually remember playing with one of my friends, and it is pretty cool if I remember correctly. You have like kind of it's a baseball game, of course, but occasionally you can do kind of like supernatural things, like cause lightning to strike when they throw a pitch or something like that.
Interesting.
It's something like that. So yeah, it's kind of a cool little game. What was the other one? NES. Oh gosh, it's in Japanese. I didn't pull up the correct thing to look at it. I just pulled up a video to go on. Hold on. Okay, here we go. Thanks to the Reddit comments. Ninja Jaja Maru-kun for NES. Okay. I got a video of it pulled up. All I see right now is a ninja riding a frog, so that looks pretty badass. Attention. Yeah, exactly. So that's the only Nintendo one. The other ones were all Super Nintendo, and I think I'm lately... Oh, Magical Drop 2 is also one. That's a Super Nintendo one. It's kind of a... it looks like... Did you ever play... Oh, I think it's Bust-A-Move. Is that the one where you shoot the gem? It's like a Tetris kind of game, but you like shoot gems. It looks...
It looks like
that.
Okay.
So Joe and Mac, I think, will be the big one there for most people. The other ones, not so much. But anyway, always still cool to see those things added onto it. Okay, that's the only news I have. Let's talk about the games we've been playing. Jay, how many do you have to talk about?
I'm just going to talk about one for today. There's another one that I'm working through right now that I'll probably finish before I talk about it more in depth, to be honest.
Okay. Do you mind going first? Because I'll probably just... I've got three or four, and I'll do three, and if I still have a bunch of time, then I'll talk about the fourth one. If not, I'll just gauge in on how much time we have left.
Sounds good.
Okay.
I'm going to pull up the wiki real quick, just get the date. Oh, it's on sale on GOG, too, according to Google. So I played Might and Magic 8, Day of the Destroyer. I played this game for the podcast before. This is a 3DO game, or excuse me, 3DO, made by 3DO, the company. That came out in 2000? Yeah, came out in 2000 for PC. I didn't realize it came out for PS2. I might have to look at that at some point to see if it's see how it is, because I've only played it on PC.
I bet so it's pretty much the same thing, just ported, right?
I don't know. I would think so, but it'd be kind of interesting to play this game with a controller as opposed to a mouse and keyboard, because there's quite a bit of commands and stuff. I'd just be kind of curious to see if it translates well. Did you ever play? Did you ever try to play like Command and Conquer or StarCraft on
N64? No. Definitely not.
I always loved watching people play that. I'm like, how in the world are you playing this right now? Nope. So I've talked about this game on the podcast before, and this is obviously an RPG, which as I said before is made by the 3DO company, and this is part of the Might and Magic series. Now there are obviously I don't know if there's only two segments for the type of games that they make, but they obviously make the RPGs, which is the ones I think they do up through 9 or 10. I think if they do the Might and Magic series, and then they have the Heroes of Might and Magic, which I've talked about extensively in the podcast as well. Number 8 for the RPG series is my favorite, and realistically it's one of the only ones that I've actually played. I played a couple of other ones. I think I played 9 and 6 a little bit, not enough to really talk about it, but I originally was going to play one of the other ones in the series, and I looked through them. I watched YouTube videos of, like, people doing basic playthroughs, and it just didn't interest me at all. I don't know what it is about the other ones in the series, because I know a lot of people are really big fans of some of the other ones in the series. People like rave about the first couple ones, and I think part of that has to do with nostalgia, because it's a really old style. I imagine it'd be really hard to step into if you've never played it before.
Yeah, this is like map it out on on graph paper type dungeon crawler, correct?
Originally, yes. Obviously, now, but with 8, it's much more extensive. Okay. You know, you have like the full deal going on. So I was going to play one of the other ones, and I ended up just playing through 8 again, and I actually played it and beat it again. And I had a lot of fun with it. It's an excellent game, and there's a variety of reasons why I really like this game. So one of the interesting things about this game is in a lot of these styles of games, generally when you start the game, you can have a total of 5 party members. And a lot of these games, you obviously build your party out, or you'll, pick your starting member, and then you'll start to build your other characters along the way. This game does a little bit of like a hybrid variant. You basically custom make your first character, and then throughout the game, you find people that you interact with, and when you interact with them long enough, in a lot of cases, they'll join you, and then you can basically build your party throughout the game based on the classes and whatever else you think is important. There's voice acting for all the characters, which is it's actually kind of fun. I actually really I never realized how much I appreciate the voice acting in this game, but some of the characters. They don't have like extensive lines, right? Like I'm not talking about lines and lines of dialogue, but they might have like four or five different audio cues, whatever you want to call them, audio clips. And some are really funny. Like they have some like really aggressive or pissed off sort of tones to them, which adds a little bit of character development to them. And there's not a whole lot of character development that is not written. Majority of it is all written, and it's not anything super fascinating. I mean, the story is really basic. It's basically this guy. Which I don't really know how to describe him. He calls himself like the Destroyer of Worlds. He basically comes into this town. He creates this crystal and basically says like, "Hey, you're more or less," which says like, "Hey, everybody's fucked. Like, you basically need to. You're all gonna die at a certain point. And your quest is obviously typical, save the world, right? Like nothing too creative there.
Whoa!
Yeah, right. Yeah, like nothing new there. But it's kind of interesting because in my magic, they do a lot of things with like elemental planes, which again they use that in this game as well, where basically the idea is you need to go to the elemental planes and do work there, meaning kill stuff or collect stuff, and then ultimately you can go and kill the final boss. So there's not really anything super extensive in terms of story, but there is something I'll talk about in just a little bit here, which I've talked about before a little bit on the podcast as well. But what do I like about this game? So building a party is really fun, especially early on. So when you pick your first character, there's a good variety of races and classes you can choose from. That basically each race is locked to a specific class, right?
Oh,
Right? Yeah.
really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah,
That's weird.
yeah. So you kind of custom build the classes, sort of, but there's obviously a lot of restrictions to it. So like you're a vampire. Generally, vampires can only be vampire. What's called a vampire class, which means they have
Makes
specific
sense.
abilities to it. Yeah, and realistically, your race more or less determines what class you're playing throughout the game.
How do you
I was
feel
trying to
about
think
that?
if it was. It limits it a little bit, but at the same like it but if you know about it going into it, it's not too bad, but it definitely does create a little bit of a cookie cutter mold. You can go a little bit in certain directions with them and be a little bit more creative. So like for instance, if you choose to make a necromancer, the necromancer you could specialize in fire or any of the other elements. You could also do dark specialization, which means you're basically just putting a lot more points and effort into that specific school so that you can become stronger at it. You can also do things like if you want to be really strong with staves, you can do that on like a necromancer, and they can be pretty strong with staves. Or if you want to do dagger, now there are limitations. So like the necromancer can only become like an expert at daggers, but he can become a master at staves. So it's like, well, I probably want to go staves in this case. Like you're not going to
Okay.
make like a dark elf that wields like a two-handed axe because he can only learn it. He can't even expert it. So
Okay.
there are some guardrails there that give you some sort of suggestion on how you should do things. But at the same time, you can be a little bit more creative about it. So the two things that I generally choose as my starting character is either actually there's really three. One is the Dark Elf. The Dark Elf just kind of fills a lot of the needed gaps, especially in the early game. The reason is the Night Elf has really or the Dark Elf, Night Elf. Sorry, I'm gonna probably say them interchangeably, but they're kind of the same in my mind.
Oh,
I think it's
Night
dark.
Elf and Dark Elf are two different things.
I don't know that they are. I just want to clarify that in case people had two different.
Okay.
If I didn't understand it,
You're
but
gonna
yeah.
treat them as the same thing if they're not different. Or
Exactly.
if they, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So Dark Elf has a really high personality, which allows it to be sort of your party leader. They can vendor stuff, meaning like trade stuff really easily. They even have a spell that you can put points into that gives them even a higher ability to barter. So they're a really great starting character. They also have really good perception, which allows them to see traps. There are traps throughout this game everywhere. And the way that you identify traps is if you have perception, you'll just see like this red lining in a certain area. Like you'll see it on the ground or on a wall or wherever it is. And in a lot of cases, it will either kill or severely damage you. So having the ability to perceive traps is incredibly important. Also, it also gives you access to things you wouldn't otherwise know that are there. This could be bonus quests, this could be extra loot, this could be a variety of things. So if you don't have perception, especially in the early game, you'll miss out on things you didn't even know were there. And they're not like game changing, like you're not going to be able to, it's not like you're not going to be able to beat the game, but it just makes the game a little bit easier. in a sense. So perception is really nice. Disarm trap, pretty self-explanatory, but if you don't have disarm trap, you're either going to, again, die to traps when you open treasure chests or doors, or you may just get maimed severely. So, and it can even cause you as well is you may have to just ignore chests for a little while, because if your characters are low and you don't have mana and you can't rest, whatever it is, you may have to skip chests because you just can't take the damage from it. So that can be pretty detrimental to your party. So perception, disarm trap. He also has bow really early on. You can do he or she, to be honest, because you can have a male or female. But okay. My character was the male. And they can also use bows. They can do it at a grandmaster level. And I think at master higher, they fire two arrows at a time, which is pretty darn nice. They're a really great character really early on. And they can also like dual wield swords and do good damage. The troll, the reason I like the troll again is just it's a really strong frontline. And realistically, you don't necessarily have a frontline in this game. You have five characters, and their positioning does not determine whether or not they get hit when if a mob swings at you or fires something at you. So, but it's really, having a troll early on, they have regen, like self-regeneration, so they heal pretty consistently over time, especially when you grandmaster it. You can be in combat just like healing and healing and healing without even doing anything, which is pretty darn nice. The troll's just kind of like a, I just want to beat things down. I don't think they have anything super extensive in terms of like utility like the Dark Elf, but they're just really meaty and they do a substantial amount of damage. The Minotaur, which is the third one that I do a lot, has high personality, does incredible damage. The Minotaur can be a Grandmaster at using an axe, a two-handed axe. And I think this has like some D&D elements to it, obviously, as most of these types of games do. But one of the stats you can get is if you get high enough in the ability to use your axe, the skill you have in it applies to your armor. So you can actually become tankier the more points you put into axes, which is awesome because it's like, well, do I want to put points into plate or mail? Or do I want to put points into axes? It's like, well, shit, I'm just going to put points into axes, do more damage, and just become slightly tankier over time, which is pretty cool.
Your audio is going to kind of go nuts. What was the last thing you said?
I was going to say, in terms of like priority of the ones that I generally choose, it's usually like Dark Elf, then Minotaur, and Troll, like for the starting characters. You can also do something like a Warrior, a Cleric, a Vampire, a Necromancer. I think that's it. I think that's all of them. So early on, you get access to different characters. Like you'll get access to a Necromancer really early, a Cleric, a Vampire. And then ultimately you get access to a lot more characters throughout the game. You can also, you can't start with a dragon, but you can get a dragon later on. And dragons are just ridiculously overpowered. They're generally, when you acquire them or when they join your party, they're considered to be like super high level and super strong. They also have incredible utility because they can fly. They can identify items really easily and a couple of different things. They also do incredible damage and they have really good AOE. Like they're just ridiculous. They're just super overpowered. So I played this time. I went into it with the mindset of I'm not going to use a dragon just because generally the dragon gives you just a just ridiculous edge throughout the game, especially in the later parts of it. So once you lock in your first character, you explore the first town. You understand that there are these pirates that are attacking, so you can go out and farm the pirates. You can start doing some of the quests in the city, and ultimately you start building up your party a little bit. Before you leave the first town, you'll have a party of four. Like I said, you can get a cleric, necromancer, and vampire in town. You don't have to take any of them. You can actually leave them all there and go on by yourself. I will say you probably won't have a whole lot of success because this game's not super easy, especially early on. It's not really forgiving, and there are a lot of bullshit things that can happen that can ultimately kill you.
Like what?
Like I said before, traps and stuff like that. If you see them, that can kill you. There's also a lot of mobs that are just really vicious and you really can't escape them. Like you can't just like kite them indefinitely. You'll be in a room and like the walls will come down or, you know, whatever it is. And I will say the first island, which is called Dagger Wound Island, it's shaped like a dagger. And then there's like smaller islands that are shaped like blood droplets. Dagger Wound Island, at the end of it, you get to really your first dungeon, which is like this temple. There's puzzles throughout it. They're not super complex. They're kind of a nice little touch to it. And it's a nice variant to, you know, basically you go into the dungeon. It's very creepy.
Hold on. Your mic is really starting to like, just...
Can you describe it for me?
Yeah, like you're like... It sounds like you're talking through a pillow.
Interesting. I'm not moving at all, so I'm not sure what's causing it.
Like everyone, like right now, like every once in a while, you get very clear.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder what's causing that.
I don't know.
Is it happening right now?
Kind of. Now it definitely is.
Just moving the microphone away, so I
That
it's like
might.
right against my mouth right now.
Huh?
It's right against my mouth right now, so I'm not sure
Maybe
what
it's
else.
like. Maybe it's too close then.
I try. What like that?
That sounds good so far.
Okay, I'll leave it like that.
It might have been like too. Maybe it was like cutting out because it was getting too much or something.
Yes, I can't believe this technology is just such a pain in the ass 20 years later. It was like the same stuff when I used to do broadcasting. Like it's the same shit we were dealing with like 15, 20 years ago. I just, or not 15, 10 years ago. I can't believe like it's not just like plug and play. You know, like I'm not moving. Like if you saw a picture, I haven't moved at all for like the last 10 minutes. Like I'm sitting in one spot.
Probably more than t probably been like all week you haven't moved.
Well, I mean, legitimately, I'm not moving at all. Like in terms of when I'm talking and stuff, because I just don't want to cause any like fluctuation in the volume or anything.
Yeah.
So, anyways, so
One day I'm
as
gonna
you,
send you a mic.
this microphone's really nice. This is a different mic than I used previously. So,
Is a different one? Oh.
I don't know. I just have really bad luck with headsets and microphones. I don't know why. It's just something. I guess I
Headsets.
just spilled water on them or something.
Headsets and microphones?
Yeah,
Oh.
headsets in particular. Headsets are just disastrous. I don't know. Anyways, so one of the things that's really nice about this game is the music is pretty good. I would say it's well above average. It adds a nice little undertone to the scenery. It's nice. The tracks aren't super extensively long, but they run well enough to
It's
keep you
not,
good.
I can't.
I'm not moving. I promise you.
Actually,
I'm literally sitting in one spot.
I can barely even hear you now.
I don't know what to do. I'm literally sitting in one spot. I don't know. I'm not moving at all. I'm not changing
Move it
anything.
away a little bit. Move it away and see if that does anything.
Is that better?
Yes.
That's super far away. I mean, that's really far away, but
That sounds like a million times better.
okay.
If
I'll leave
that,
it as is.
like, if you can do this, if it's not a problem,
No,
please, because it
it's on an
sounds
arm, so I
great.
don't have to do anything. I don't have to change anything. It's on an arm, so
Okay.
wherever it works.
Do this, definitely. This is a, you like, I'll like give you a
Oh, I believe
timestamp to
you.
go check out
I'll help you.
later. No, I know you believe me, but I just want you to hear like what, like how big of a difference it makes.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, go. This is great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for letting me know. So I was gonna say the music in this game is well above average. It adds a nice little element to obviously the undertones of the game. The tracks aren't super long, but they loop well together. Excuse me, they loop well enough to where you don't really notice it. You know, like certain tracks you play in older games where it has like a variant in. You know, it's like a really loud one, or it's like really exciting, and then it lulls out, and then you like hear the second it loops back around. Yeah, so this game does a great job of smoothing that out to where it's a pretty continuous loop without you really noticing. Especially when you get into the first dungeon. What I was kind of talking about before is like the audio cues of your character. One of the funny things is one of your characters, it's your cleric. He'll walk it when you walk into the first dungeon. The music starts and it's got like a really good eerie undertone to it.
Oh, that's cool.
And this game, when you enter buildings, like when you're going to go into a building, you get this really nice sort of visual, like really high graphic visual. It's kind of like a GIF. It's like basically a very short video clip that is cycling, and it just adds a little bit more detail to where you're going. So it'll have like a short little blurb of like where you're going and what it looks like. You know, it'll say like a really damp cave or like a whatever it is, right? And it'll have like a nice little high graphic visual that just adds a little bit more before you go inside. And then once you step inside, the eerie music starts, and Frederick, who's the cleric, he's like, "What's that strange smell?" Like it just they do a great job of kind of alluding into it. And when you first walk into the dungeons, by the way, you can't see. You have a very limited radius because you need the ability to. Either you have to light a torch, or excuse me, you have to use torchlight, which is a spell. So, as I was talking about before with utility, there's a lot of utility in this game. So, your necromancer has the ability to do light torch or torchlight, which gives you obviously a radius of light around you. He also has an ability called Wizard's Eye, which allows you to see reagents or items on the ground so you can identify where they are. And based on his skill level, he can see other things as well, such as like mobs. So, he can actually tell you where the mobs are. So, it gives you a little bit like a strategic element there. The cleric can give a million different blesses, like buffs, like bless,
Oh, cool.
regeneration, you know. And oh, I forgot to mention this to you. I want to actually show you a picture of this.
I like when you can just like buff the hell out of your characters.
Yeah, exactly. And what's cool is, like, again, the cleric has four bodies of magic. It's like light, spirit, body, and something else. But what's cool about this, they do this. I was showing this to Lisa. The spell books in this game are amazing. They have these really, really cool visuals in them that are very well detailed, especially compared to the rest of the game. I'm trying to find a good screenshot of this. Isn't a really good one. Let me see if I can find a necromancer one. Come on. Oh, this will work. This will work. So the spell books, when you open them up, and so one thing I should clarify here, this game can either be played in real time, where you basically are just trading blows based on your character's speed and all that fun stuff, or you can actually play this in turn-based, where basically you go, then they go, and you go based on your speed, and you can go in rotations. I've never played the turn-based style because I just really like the real time of this game. It's always been
Oh, you
really exciting
do.
to me. So when you play this game, when you open your spell book, the game pauses for a second so you can kind of think. And if you look, I just
Wait,
put
does
an
it only
image
pause
here.
for a second or it pauses as long as it's open?
It pauses as long as you need. If you're
Okay.
opening your spell book to determine what spell you're going to use, it pauses until you're ready to keep going.
Okay.
So I just posted an image here. This isn't like the best one, but like you'll see, like I really like the images for these. In a lot of cases, you can understand what is going on just based on the visual. So like the upper left one, which is like it's a mail helm with a mace with a flail hitting it, it's stunned. The turtle below it, that's
Oh, I
slow.
see. Okay. These
The
are like
guy uses
pages inside the
the
book that we're
dagger.
looking at. Yeah.
Exactly. Telekinesis, and then stone skin, and then earth resistance, and then swarm at the bottom right.
Yeah, that's
So
cool.
each of the spell books has their own unique one. I was trying to find one more detailed because there are some really, really, really cool spell books. Like I wish I could find it for you, but it's awesome. And so as you progress in the game, like you get Armageddon, which is just basically like a mushroom cloud, like a nuke mushroom cloud. I love the spell book. I love it. As you accumulate more spells, it's so fun to just look in here. And it's also exciting because it's kind of like a completionist mentality. Because if you look at this, like you're basically just like mapping out this spell book. And this is only one page for one character, right? So there's
Yeah.
obviously an extensive amount of spells. I don't want to oversell it and act like all these spells are good. Majority of them aren't that great. Some of them are pretty useless, but there are obviously some really powerful ones as well.
That's
So
cool.
yeah, I really like it. And so as you're going through the dungeon, there's all these different spells you can use. You know, you have a set amount of mana, you can rest. And then your characters have abilities. So I talked about like staves, daggers. You also have an armor. You can use like bows, different magic, but there's also some sort of like just utility-based ones, sort of uncategorized. So there's like identify item, which allows your characters to identify items on the spot, which is great because if you get a good item, you want to use it quickly, right? So if your character can't identify it, they'll literally just be like, I don't know. Like, I can't identify it. Like, they'll just tell you, like, I can't do it. But if they get it, and what's great is my necromancer, he's my primary identifier, he'll just be like, it's worthless. It's worthless. It's worthless. Like, he'll just tell you. And then if you get something good, he's like, ah, useful tool. Like, if it's something really good, which
Oh,
sometimes
cool.
he's right. And sometimes he can fuck off because some of the stuff he calls garbage are actually like really good items. He just doesn't know.
Or maybe he just
So,
wants to be like, oh yeah, just give this to me. It's trash.
yeah, right. I stacked my Necromancer heavily this game. I was just trying to get him to be as powerful as I could. So I was just pumping him with items.
Yeah, you
So you
were.
got identify item. The other one that's really fun in this game is alchemy. I've always loved alchemy in this game for a variety of reasons. So, alchemy, you basically can find reagents on the ground. You could take an empty vial, you put the reagent in there, and you get a color of a potion. You can get like yellow, blue, red, and then you can mix yellow and blue together to get green, or red and blue together to get purple, right? So, you can mix all these different potions. They do different things. As you mix things correctly, you learn those potions, and then you can make them for the future. Now, I will say, your inventory is one of those very large Excel spreadsheet grids. So, it's like a 50 by 50 grid or something. A reagent takes one spot, a potion takes two spots. So, as you can imagine, you can fill up your inventory very quickly with reagents and potions. So, that is one of the downsides to the alchemy system in this game. However, inventory management in this game is part of it, and I actually really enjoy it. I actually really do enjoy doing inventory management in this game. So, as you level up your alchemy skill, meaning you go from the basic to expert to master to grandmaster, you can mix more and more progressive potions. So, essentially, you could take those potions I talked about before, start mixing them and making what are called mixed potions. And it looks like a swirl of the two colors that you put together. So if you correctly mix a blue and an orange together, well, you get a blue and an orange mixture potion, and it's got a visual of a potion with a blue and orange center that is mixed. and it has a unique effect to it, right? And you can learn all the different ones again, because again, you can mix all the ones that exist at the base level together to get these ones. And then you can take all of those and mix those together, and some of those are positive, some of those are negative in terms of success or failure, and they turn into what's called a white potion. And the white potions give your character a temporary bonus of some kind. It could be like stone skin, it could be a stat buff, it could be a variety of different things. And then you can take the white potions and mix those together to make black potions. And black potions, they give you...
You mix white potions together to make black?
Well, it's magic, come on. It's fantasy, okay. You do whatever you want.
Okay.
So the black potions give your character a permanent buff that affects your stats or a variety of different things. The challenge is two things. One, your character can only drink one black potion per game. So you have to be very selective on which
per
one you
game?
Choose. Per game, yeah, because okay. they're insanely strong. Like they give you like 50 strength.
Oh, so it's like a permanent. Okay, I see.
Yeah, because your character might have like 60 agility or something, and the potion might give you 50 more. So that's like 110. Like if you get enough early on, you're just yoked.
So they're nuts powerful.
Yes, and the other thing is though, they cause your character to age extensively. So which is kind of interesting. I've never really done much with it, but I definitely consumed a lot of black potions this run, and I did notice my character's age going up. I don't know if your stats deteriorate at a certain point. I should have looked this up. I just thought about it, but I don't know if your stats deteriorate anything or if they die at a certain point or something, but they definitely age more aggressively once they start drinking black potions, because there's actually a potion you can drink that helps you to lessen your aging.
Wait, so how does the aging work?
Just tells you. It's on like your character sheet. It tells you how old you are.
And like how much does a character age throughout the game?
Probably a few to several years normally.
And what kind of effects does that have?
I don't know. That's what I was gonna say. I don't know. Okay. I need to look it up to find out, because I know that like I get the feeling the game was trying to help you and warn you, like, hey, don't age too quickly. And I don't know what that means, like if your stats get lessened or something, or your characters just ultimately die. But my character's like my starting character, I think he was like 18 when I started playing the game, and he was like 34 by the time I was done. I definitely aged like much faster than I should have been, because like a day in that game is probably like I don't know, an hour roughly. Okay. Maybe you sleep a lot, you rest a lot, so you know there's a chance that you expedite that. But yeah, so alchemy system, it's really fun. And the other thing I should say is, if you mix a potion incorrectly or you don't have the skill to do it, the potion will explode. And it will damage that character in a lot of, it also moves your screen, which is kind of funny. So like the character will die a lot of times, and then the screen will like pan to the ground or something, because it's just like the explosion caused your camera to pan away or whatever.
Okay.
And one of the things I should clarify is your characters can get knocked unconscious, meaning they have like slightly negative health, or they can get killed, where they basically go to they basically get sent to the graveyard, and they either need to be resurrected through a spell or by like a church. Like the church can resurrect your characters. When you die, okay. In a lot of cases, your armor breaks, so you need somebody who has the ability to repair armor. So again, utility mechanics, so like there's different traits or different skills your characters can learn that are really beneficial to your journey, right? Like having all these things at once is really, really nice to have.
Yeah.
I talked about mercantile, which is just bartering ability. I think that's most of them. That's like most of the secondary skills. So yeah, as you progress through the game, you go through, do different quests. You explore the world. There's a ton of different dungeons. You get a lot of quests. The game doesn't give you a whole lot of... It gives you like a general idea of where you need to be going, but it's not great. It's very easy to get stuck at times. I got stuck, even though I played this game before, a few times, because I just couldn't remember exactly where I needed to go. There is a guy, which is nice. There is a guy who is in a house outside one of the first towns who you can talk to, and you can say like, where do I go next? And he'll give you like a real kind of loose hint of where you need to go. And then if you say like, and he has you have a speech option that says, I lost it. And what he'll do is he'll give you any of the recent quest items you need to progress through the game. So if you accidentally sell or get rid of something, you can talk to him and say, I lost it. And then he'll give you that item back. If there's no item that you don't have that you need, he'll just say you never had it. So like the game gives you like some light clues, but it doesn't like tell you like, oh, go to town, talk to this person, then go to this dungeon. Like, it gives you a general idea of where you need to be going.
Do you find yourself lost very often? Like not knowing where to go?
If it was my first time playing, probably, for sure, unless you read everything as you're going through it. Uh-huh. Even this time playing, because I've beaten it a couple times before, there were a couple times when I struggled to figure out where to go. And it was just, in a lot of cases, I was just moving too quickly and I forgot to finish like a dialogue option with somebody or, you know, something minor. Like in a lot of cases, it was just, I was moving too quickly.
Gotcha.
This game ramps up very quickly. Early on, you can kind of go toe to toe with mobs and fight them and be in melee range of them. Later on, you cannot. You basically you can try to be in melee range and do some damage, but my God, the power level or the power creep just ramps up so fast, especially when you get to later parts of the game. As I talked about before, you kind of have to go to the elemental planes, which is basically you go to these different planes. Like the water one is underwater, unsurprisingly, and your necromancer or your dragon can learn how to fly at a certain point. And if you don't have fly, I don't understand how you can even beat this game because there are when you go to the
You learn
different
to fly?
planes. Yeah, you can learn how to fly, which you can't fly anywhere. You can fly in like in most areas.
Is it like Superman type flying, or like do you have something like some sort of vehicle or mount or something?
No, it's like a spell. It's a spell that allows you to
That's
fly.
awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice. And what's cool about it is like well, what's really shitty is if you're in the air and you get shot down, like if somebody kills your necromancer while you're in the air, he's the one channeling it. So you just plummet to your death. And your characters, by the way, when they're falling, they scream. It's really fucking scary at times because they'll just be like, "Oh!" And you're like, "Oh shit, like I'm gonna die here."
Okay,
And
that's great.
your characters will tell you like when they're in trouble, like they'll be like, like they'll tell you like, "Oh, I'm badly wounded, like I need help." Like my cleric will be like, "Help me now." Like he'll tell you if he's like getting beat up or whatever. Then my favorite line is there's a character, my little brother and I quote this all the time. His name's Blazing Stormlance. Great name. He's incredibly high level. And when you get him, you're like level 25, 26. He's 50. Like he's a substantially stronger dude. And when all the other party members die, he goes, "No worries, I'm still alive." Like that's what he says when everybody else is dead. Like he's just that confident. He's a warrior, so or champion as they're called later on. But there's some pretty good one-liners that come from the characters. And what's cool is when you make your character, by the way, you don't have to use the default voices that are associated with them. So you could use like a troll voice for like a dark elf, or you could even use like a vampire voice for a dark elf. Like whatever you want, you can mix and match it, which is it's not bad. I thought it'd be really awkward at first, but in a lot of cases, it matches pretty well. Like there are some ones that are pretty awkward, and you definitely know it's there. But some of the times, you can come up with some pretty creative voices. But yeah, so as you go through the elemental planes, the power creep is just too much at times. There's so many mobs. Like I end up just skipping a lot of them and just flying to the item because you're there for like these gems in each one of the four elemental planes. And in a lot of cases, you're just like sprinting your way through it. I will say the earth one is underground, unsurprisingly, and you can't fly, so you have to clear your way through it, which can be really tough. And there are these mobs that there's a spell called Blade. I think it's called no, yeah, it's Blade. And they shoot this like it's an earth spell that shoots like a razor blade at you, basically. And it makes a gunshot noise. And when I say a gunshot noise, like if every other thing in the game is volume 100, this spell is like volume 250 for some reason. So you walk around a corner and it's just like boom, and your character will die or whatever it is. And if there's multiples of them, I remember as a kid, it would scare the shit out of me because I'd walk into
Really?
a dungeon and the mob is a pile of rocks. So in a lot of cases, you don't even know it's there. And then all of a sudden, you just get hit by this blade spell, and it's so loud. I don't know why they did it, but it's just so much louder than every other spell in the game. I don't know why. But when you're going through the earth place, you have to deal with these mobs. They're not too bad because if you have the right spells for it, like if you have earth resistance and a couple other things, you just kind of work your way through it. After you get the four gems, you then go to what's called the plane between planes, and it's like this really fucked up plane. And what it is, it's like the universe is kind of like failing and falling apart. So all the mobs are like these abominable from like the darkest reaches of space, like these really
Nice.
fucked up like thousand mouth blob type creatures, like just really really bizarre looking things. And there's a bunch, all the elements are kind of like mixing together. And so you're going through this place and you find out that basically kind of like this god lives there. And yeah, as you're progressing through this plane, you find his armor and on the ground. Well, I should say in the ground because it's massive. It's his sword is in the ground like halfway, and it's bigger than any building in the game by like five times. If you took any building in the game stacked up five times, his sword is halfway through the ground and it's tall. His helmet is the size of like two buildings stacked on top of one another. So
Damn.
you start to get the idea that you're in a really bizarre place. So you go to his labyrinth, as it's called, and it's this really long puzzle of all these doors and switches, and you fight all these mobs, and you talk to him, and he's just like, "Oh, it's you. Like, what do you want?" You're like, "I'm here to stop you." And he's like, "Sure. Like, good luck, bro. Like, you're not gonna do anything." And you're
Cool
like, "Well, I'm
story.
here to stop you." Yeah, he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I destroy worlds. Like, I'm literally destroy worlds. I can do whatever I want. I could crush your planet whenever I want. I'm just here for a little bit to do this thing. And you're like, well, I'm going to kill you. He's like, you know what? Let's just do this. I'll give you three riddles. If you solve my three riddles, I'll fuck off. Okay? So you get these three riddles. I've read these off on the podcast before.
I remember that. Okay, I don't know that was from this game.
Yeah, the three riddles. So once you solve the three riddles, he basically fucks off. And he ultimately, what's funny is, like, what he doesn't realize is, because he allows us to progress, we end up finding a way, sort of roundabout way, of killing him. In a way, it's kind of weird without going super far into the story, but basically he ends up dying, but he doesn't, because he turns out to be a robot. Which, a really big twist. I was so surprised by this, because this is like an older world type game, kind of like the Crusades type time with fantasy.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really surprising to see something like that, like magic everywhere, right? Like all that kind of stuff is everywhere. But to see like this type of technology was kind of weird. So I guess he's like some kind of alien, was my kind of take on it. I don't really know. But I love the fact that they did with riddles, because the combat in this game is very fun and I really appreciate it. But boss battles are basically you just like hacking and slashing your way through it, putting up spells occasionally. You know, there's not really anything super extensive to a boss battle. So having like a boss battle with a big giant thing would just be you kiting him in circles for 45 minutes and just burning it down. Right. So I was really happy that they did something a little bit creative in terms of the riddles. The riddles are not that bad. I didn't enjoy them as much when I was younger, but now that I'm a little bit older, I got through them pretty quickly. And it wasn't based on what I remembered. It was just kind of based on the clues that were there. One of them was kind of dumb. The other two I thought were pretty good. So I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the ending to it. So all in all, this is a fantastic game. Will I play any of the other games in the Magic series?
I was about to ask that.
Probably not. Maybe at some point. I looked through them, and again, like, if people have recommendations of ones they think I'll really like, if they've played 8, let me know and I'll give it a shot. I almost bought 9. I watched somebody play through it. I almost bought 6. I watched somebody play through it. It looks kind of fun, but it just doesn't have the same, it doesn't capture me the same way. There is something special about this game, and it may just be purely nostalgia because I played this as a child, but this game is, I really like it. I think there's a lot of really good elements to it. The combat is great. The party development's great. I love progressing through all the different dungeons in the world. I love interacting with it. There also are some tough choices you have to make at a certain point between the different guilds. There's like a necromancer's guild, there's a cleric's guild, and they obviously hate each other. And when you're progressing throughout the game, you have to make certain decisions that will ultimately benefit or destroy one or the other. So
you don't join them, but you're like,
join them, I think, to some extent, but like, at a certain point, you get quests that interact with them a little bit, and certain ones will change your reputation or, in certain cases, even destroy the other ones, which is kind of cool. There's light ability to interact with the world in that regard. There's also a ton of secrets in this game, ones that are obvious and other ones that are not. There are just randomly trees you can find in the world that are treasure chests that I've accidentally found over the time just by hitting the use command. Just kind of walking through areas.
So imagine that in lore, like, that means you just walked up to a tree and grabbed part of it to see if it would open up, and then it did.
You're just like knocking on everything, like, sounds hollow.
That's what I do when we go on hikes. Whenever we pass a tree, I'm like, let me just check.
Well, have you ever gone geocaching before? Because that's what geocaching is.
I haven't, but that's a good point.
Yeah. But yeah, this game's fantastic. I really enjoy this. The scaling of your characters is really exciting. You know, as I talked about building your characters out, you know, I pumped my dark elf with the ability to use bows. Oh, I didn't even talk about itemization. There's a multitude of items throughout this game. Some of them are really great, and you'll get different things. Like, there's usually a really good balance of yin and yang when it comes to items. Like, if an item is super overpowered, like, it gives you, like, 50 strength, or 50 might, as it's called, it might have, like, 50 reduced stamina or health. Right, like, they do a good job of balancing it out. There's a really powerful bow that I got at a certain point that does AoE explosive damage, which is super overpowered because there's not a ton of AoE in this game. But the problem is, the bow, if you fire it too close, you can actually damage yourself. So they do a good job of balancing
the bow?
Yeah, because it's explosive arrows. So
I missed that. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, because it does like AoE, it does AoE effects, and it can actually impact your party. But when you get certain items, like there's an axe of Balthazar, I think is what it's called, and it belongs to the Minotaur King, and you ultimately give it to him as an offering for something in the game. And at a certain point, if you have a Minotaur, I forget what the I think it's called the Grand Minotaur is the evolved form, but he can actually get the axe. And when I got it, I was like, I wonder how powerful this is. It's crazy. Like when you get certain items or as you get like really powerful items, your characters start to do so much damage. And it's really exciting to do different types of builds. I will say you could ultimately fuck yourself by putting yourself in like a really tough corner or putting points in things that aren't that great. But overall, the game is pretty... it's pretty soft for the most part. If you do stupid things, like if you're playing like a vampire and you try to put a bunch of points in something they can only expert, you're probably going to have a bad time and you're not going to do really well. Okay. Whereas if you like look at the things and understand where your characters can ultimately go within reason, you can build out some pretty strong characters pretty easily and then just kind of go from there. It's a lot of it's intuitive, to be honest.
Okay.
Trying to think what else.
There's more?
I think that's kind of everything. Really fun game. I really appreciate this game. I've played through this game 2, 3, 4 times probably in my life. Really enjoy it. It's a great, great installment of Might and Magic. If anybody has recommendations of ones that they've played they really like, let me know. I'll take a look at it. I've looked at a lot of them already myself, but I'm definitely open to look at some of the other ones in the series because like, I really want to expand it to some of the other ones given that I like this game so much. But, you know. Yeah.
Nice. I'm kind of angry now because now I have to play this game.
Yeah, when we were talking about it, you're like, oh, I kind of want to play that. I was like, I don't want to oversell this game, but I really like it. I when I was playing it, when you and I were talking, I was like, I feel like I'm overselling it to Robert. And then I finished it. I'm like, I really like this game. Like, I really do. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it's just kind of old school and it is nostalgia. But I don't know. I really, really enjoy playing this game.
Tell me if this is accurate or not. But based on like your description of it, it sounds kind of like one of those games that there's not a whole lot that's especially unique about it, but just all aspects of it are just done really well.
Yeah, for the most part, I think that's a fair statement. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very traditional RPG at that time. I don't think there's anything that does like exceptionally well, but it does a lot of things really good. Yeah, gotcha. I think that's a fair statement.
Well, okay. I think, golly, I'm going to have to add this to the list. It's on the list. But I don't know when I'm going to get to it. Okay, I assume that's all you've got for this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't have half as much to say about any of my games, but let's see what I can say about them. So we got about 30 minutes left. I'm gonna leave us about 15 at the end.
Sorry for taking too much time.
No, it's no problem at all. I'm just kind of planning this out in my head. We have two emails. And then if we want to talk about any current gaming subcast stuff, we'll do that. So I'll leave 15 or 20 minutes, depending on like what point I end at on one of the games. And I'll just stop talking about my games and we'll go on to other stuff. Oh. But no. Yeah, that I really enjoyed hearing all that because the game sounds like tons of fun. Okay, so what? Pick a number 1 through 4.
Three.
Doom 2.
Ooh.
Doom 2 came out, I don't have the dates for any of these, 1994. Obviously, it was PC, but it's been obviously ported to about 24 other things since then. But, so I don't know if you remember, but I went back and played the original Doom. You know, I had played both of these when I was younger, of course, but I played the original Doom for the podcast, like, 2 years ago, or maybe, God, it must have been probably about 2 years ago now, and I really liked it. Like, I was kind of expecting to be bored by it, but it held up extremely, you know, even though I really liked it at the time, I was like, you know, I doubt it's aged that well, but let's go back and see. But I really feel like it has aged pretty well, and I really enjoyed it and played through the whole thing and beat it. And ever since then, I've been wanting to go back and give Doom 2 a shot, see if it holds up as well. I feel like the way sequels used to work is kind of different to how we view sequels nowadays as far as video games go. Tell me if this is true for you, but I feel like back in the olden days when a sequel to anything came out, even if it was on the same console or the same, you know, even if it needed to run on basically the same PC specs, there was always some sort of like major improvement to where it wasn't just, okay, here's a couple new systems added to the game, but and may, you know, maybe the story goes on, but it was more like, oh, well, they figured out how to make these games better. They figured out how to do graphics better in the meantime.
Yep.
They figured out how to add just more variety of stuff in the meantime. Whereas nowadays there's less emphasis on that. And yes, usually in a sequel, you do get new things and some improved stuff, but it's more a matter of continuing the story and maybe kind of like tweaking stuff and not so much like improving stuff. I don't know. Is that, do you think that's a fair take or am I off on that?
No, I think you're spot on. I think the only thing I'd add to that, and this is one of my big, not to go down a rabbit hole, but one of my biggest complaints with games today is the focus around graphics. Like back in the day when new games come out, yeah, graphics would obviously get better in a lot of cases, but in a lot of cases, the gameplay would get substantially better, or the customization, or, you know, whatever it is, like there'd be some really, really cool updates that would be revolutionary for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's how I always view these. So I was kind of excited going into this one, 'cause I was like, this will be the, you know, the first time that I don't really, you know, that since we've been doing the podcast, that I don't really remember in detail what a sequel was like, but it'll be just like the old days where, oh, I played Doom 1. I remember that. Now let's see how much better Doom 2 is. So I was actually genuinely excited going into this one to see how, you know, how it was improved and all that. And I was actually disappointed because It doesn't really do much new or different. And in fact, some of it's not as good, in my opinion, as the first Doom. The graphics, I didn't notice a difference. I did not do a side-by-side comparison. It's been 2 years since I played the first Doom, so I could be off here. But playing it, I was like, okay, this is pretty much what I remember the first Doom looking like. No huge deal. Let's just play on and see what kind of new stuff they've added to the game. Well, most of the weapons are the same. For the first long while, most of the enemies are the same.
Wow.
And they just didn't do much. And on top of that, the level... Well, I'll get to the level design in a second. They did add the double-barreled shotgun, which...
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's that. That's kind of a... That's kind of become a big part of Doom lore, I guess. But at the same time, it's just a double barrel version of the shotgun that they already had. I mean, yes, yeah. It is different. It is a different weapon. It fires more slowly and does more damage. So you have to take that into account. But like, why couldn't you add some, like, go crazy and add some like really unique kind of guns to it and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure.
There are like two or three new bad guys, I think. And you don't even encounter a lot of them until like a good ways into the game. There's one guy, granted they are pretty cool. There is the one, if you've played any of the newer Doom games, they're a little bit more prevalent in those. There are these giant, not giant, but really tall, kind of like zombie-like monsters that have basically jetpacks.
Well, yeah.
And they're pretty cool. There's also this one that does this thing where he just like raises his arms and kind of does like a sort of like a spell chant type thing, and it sets you on fire. That's kind of unique. There is the what is it? Is it the Cacodemon? Is that the big single eye one? I think.
I don't know the name offhand. Yeah.
Okay. Cacodemon. Yes. That's the big red monster that has one eye, and he's like a blob, like not a blob, but just a big round monster floating around. There is
iconic ones, right?
Yeah, it is. There's a different that one's in there, but that was in the first one. But there's a newer version of that also in this one that I don't know what it's called, but it, if I remember correctly, it spits out those skulls that chase you. And there might be a couple others, but there's not much more to it than that. Most of it is all the same old stuff. There's like humans that have kind of been turned. There are, of course, the imps. There are the kind of bull type things that just kind of rush at you. And that's really it. And then you play the levels, and the level design is just tedious. It's all based on, and now this was true in the first one to some extent, but they really ran with this, and it was the worst part of the first one's level design, which is like making levels confusing, and you have to figure out how to get to them. Like you got to explore all over the place to find a key.
Yeah, I remember.
Then you
got
to go find the door, right? And that one eventually leads to another key that you got to go find the door to put that one in. And some of them, it's more than just that. It's okay, you got to find a hidden door to actually get through the level. Like, obviously, hidden doors are all over the game in the first one, too, but most of them are for secret areas that you don't have to find. It just gives you ammo and health or something like that. But this one, there's more places where you have to figure out, okay, oh, there's a secret door here, or maybe there's some sort of kind of minor puzzle to get to the next part of the level. It's just, I really hate just running around trying to find a way. You know, especially if I've killed all the bad guys there are to kill, I just want to go to the next level. I don't want to have to, like, seek out a door or a key or something like that. Again, this is in the first Doom to some extent, but it was much less prevalent. Even though I really liked the first one, if there was one thing that I would complain about in the first one, it was this. And they do it much worse in this game. Ultimately, it got to the point where I just didn't want to play it anymore. I think I got about halfway through, maybe a little bit more than... I think I got about 60% of the way through the game. And it was just... The more I played it, every time I played it, I realized that I was doing it not because I felt like it, but I was doing it more in the sense of, oh, I have to finish this because I'm playing it for the podcast and I want to play as much as I can to talk about it.
Sure.
And I just was like, eventually just like, it's not worth it. I feel like I've gotten all there is. Nothing from this point on is going to completely turn around and be like, oh shit, the game was actually badass. I just had to spend 6 hours getting, you know, to the good parts. No, I highly doubt that's the case. It was just, it really, really started to feel like a chore playing the game. So I don't know if this is a common take on the game or not. I haven't really read any people's opinions on Doom 2 in a very long time, so I don't know if people who like the first one also dislike, if other people who like the first one dislike the second one just like me as well, or if I'm just an outlier or what. But for me, I really just didn't like Doom 2 very much, even though, like I said, I really liked the first one. So that was a bummer. We got a few more that I can talk about here. Let's do... I don't think I'm going to go back to this one. I'm trying to think if there's any of these that I might go back and play more of. I don't think there is... you know what? We don't have a lot of time. So what I'll do is I'll do a short one real quick. Let's talk about Theme Park. This is a Bullfrog game. I think, is it? Theme Park. Yes, it is a Bullfrog game. This is kind of along the lines, as you might imagine, of Roller Coaster Tycoon. This came out in 1994 as well. And it was for, you know, PC and all that kind of stuff. It was on a bunch of stuff. I remember when I played this, it was on PS1, I want to say. Yes, it did come out for PS1. When I played this, I played the PS1 version when I was younger. When I played it for the podcast, I played it for the Atari Jaguar, because I'm not really sure. I think when I bought mine, this was one of the ones that the seller was just selling with it. So I was like, and I remembered liking this one when I was little, when I played it on PS1, or not too little. I guess I was probably 13 or 14. So I was like, what the hell? Let's give this another try. Let's see how it is. It's a simplified version of Roller Coaster Tycoon. There's no designing of actual roller coasters. And it's much more heavily based on just the kind of park design and management aspect of the game. You're not actually controlling, you're not actually designing the roller coasters themselves. You have a number of different kind of buildings you can put up, you know, places that sell hamburgers or places that are rides, or you know, making sure you have bathrooms and that kind of stuff, and also hiring like mascots to walk around and keep people entertained while they're maybe in line or just walking around the park. You have to decide where the paths are going to be. You got to decide where the entrance and exit lines are going to be for each individual attraction, that kind of stuff. You can also get really granular, setting prices for like French fries, for instance. All of this stuff is also in Roller Coaster Tycoon. So it's not, yeah. So it's really not doing anything that Roller Coaster Tycoon also doesn't do. And Also, it's not doing anything better than Roller Coaster Tycoon, unfortunately. And then a big problem is you can... So despite the fact that you can unlock more rides and things as you play, when you start... When I started the game, I had 4 rides that I could build and 4 restaurants. And that's it. So if you want to build... So, you know, if you haven't gotten the research yet or whatever it is to unlock the new, you know, a new ride or restaurant or whatever it is that you're trying to unlock next, then the only way you can build expand your park is just keep building the same 4 rides over and over again and the same 4 food stands over and over again. Needless to say, this becomes extremely repetitive. You're not really doing anything... Yeah, you're not really doing anything fun. You know, think of SimCity. You have like a dozen different things you can build, and you have terrain to work around and that kind of stuff. Different transportation options. SimCity is an example of a game where that does it fantastically, of course. As we all know, the SimCity games are great. This is kind of like the antithesis to that. You got 4 of this type of thing, you got 4 of that type of thing. No terrain issues, just decide where you want your paths. And you know, if you make sure you're hiring enough people to keep the park clean and to keep maintenance up. And besides that, just keep building the same stuff over and over. And that's the extent of it. Obviously, like I said, you're gonna unlock stuff eventually, but it's really not fun just doing the same things over and over again, waiting for other things to unlock. Also, it's like got a weird pricing system where it's kind of like nothing seems to line up, like the price for French fries, you know, for instance, as opposed to, I don't know, like balloons, like, I don't know, weird thing. Like it's hard to get a chance, like, to get an idea for how much you should be charging for individual things. And also you have an advisor type guy who's constantly telling you, which is helpful. He's constantly telling you that you're charging too much for entrance, you know, for tickets to get into the park, or you're not charging enough. But it constantly adjusts based on your park. So he might say like, oh, wow, you're way overcharging. Well, that's because you haven't built shit yet for your park. Like, just give me a second, dude. Let me build some stuff. So then you lower stuff and then you build a few things. He's like, whoa, hey, you need to be charging a whole lot more. So it's kind of all over the place in that regard. Again, it's helpful that it's there, but like they needed to have like given him like an amount of time, like maybe wait 5 minutes in between things before you tell somebody to
cool down.
Huh?
Give him a cool down.
Cool down. Yeah, exactly.
He cares a lot about your park.
Huh?
He just cares a lot about your product.
He does. I guess he really does care about you. You can also, there's like a stock system where you can buy stocks in your park and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of interesting, but.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but overall, it just, there's no reason to play this when you have Roller Coaster Tycoon, especially considering how limited, like maybe if you're a 6-year-old and you really want to play a park simulator, sure, this is a very simplified version of it, but yeah, it just gets so old so fast because you build 8 things and there's nothing new to do.
Interesting, okay.
So yeah, that's theme park. That one was a big letdown, but
how did that come out?
94.
Okay.
I can't imagine too many people who want to play this game are looking for anything besides Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 anyways.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's the same thing.
Yeah, so that's just the go-to. And go-to, that was confirmed the go-to when I played this one. Okay, Jay, let's jump into emails.
Nope.
We have 2. First one is from Father Beast. Father B says, hello, classic gamers. I know you guys aren't doing top fives anymore, but I wanted to participate in a previous one for the heck of it. It's the one about MMOs. He says he hardly plays them at all, and that Robert will probably complain that most of these are not real MMOs. First one is, I'm going to cut this a little bit, cut some of these descriptions a little short so that I make sure we have enough time. Jay, you've got about 10 minutes, right?
Yep.
Okay. Number 4, Evony. I got into this over a decade ago from an ad I saw when it was called Civony, and I was into anything like Civ. This is a game where This is a game where you controlled a city on an apparently endless map covered with cities, most of which were occupied by other players. Some were NPC cities, and a lot of the mechanics involved sending raiding parties to NPC cities in order to obtain enough food to maintain a large army. The NPC cities would only restock themselves every 8 hours, and I recall people threatening to go invade someone else that they thought were raiding, quote, their NPC cities. This is also a definite pay-to-win kind of game and showered you with loot boxes that you would need to buy keys in order to open. I never spent any money and lost interest after a few months. But before he said the loot box thing, that actually sounded like a pretty cool idea to me.
Yeah, loot box is instant turnoff, obviously.
Yeah. Number three, Diablo. I admit this isn't a real MMO, but it's the first game I ever played online.
Yeah, that's the one, honestly. I've heard people can compare it to an MMO as well, because especially it had a really big community to it as well.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's like, even though you're only playing with four people, and obviously it's not really an MMO, it kind of is in a way, for the exact reason you said. Everybody is, mm-hmm. It has such a big, and in a way, like, a different community from other games like this, because you're always kind of comparing and you know, your like builds and stuff, even if you're not playing at the same time. Yeah. Number two, Dungeon Runners. This was touted as a whimsical version of WoW. I recall the highest speed of a weapon was ludicrous. Some of the weapons I saw people walking around with were pizza cutters, and the names of mini bosses I would face seemed to have a similar naming scheme. Rattletoe, Rattlefinger, Rattlebeak, and so on. I'm the kind of person who even plays an MMO by himself, just ignoring all the other people running around. It was okay, but I saw that the yellow and purple equipment was reserved only for premium members, the ones who paid money. Okay, I drifted away.
There it is.
Path of Exile is number one. I really want to like this game, but... okay, I heard about this free-to-play game and got into it. Of course, I just played by myself. I like the Diablo feel, and I progressed in the game until I was facing the boss of the first beachside region.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking forward to all the loot this boss would drop when I killed him. Then he died, and the stuff started to hit the ground, and the game crashed. Ouch.
Ooh.
I didn't get the loot. When I rebooted, it said that the pass was now open, but I wanted the loot. So I fought my way up to the mountainside again, killed him again, and the game crashed again.
Interesting. I'm really surprised by that. The guys who developed that game are phenomenal. Like, they do a great job.
That's what I've heard too. Maybe he played it like really early on or something.
Yeah, maybe. Path of Exile is an incredible game. I think it's the Diablo style. I think it's the best of the Diablo style, personally.
I hear that a lot. He says, when the game crashed when I killed him the third time, just gave up and never went back.
Yeah, understandably.
Here's something else. My New Year's resolution game has stayed the same for the last 3 years because I keep failing to play any of the games on the list.
Me too.
I am out of work while I am awaiting knee surgery, and I thought maybe I could tackle that list. I played Grim Fandango. Specifically, I played Grim Fandango Remastered, which is a good thing since it seems that my fears of playing another game made in the same way as Escape from Monkey Island were quite well justified. Well, the remastered version adds mouse support, which makes the game a lot more playable. The story is a lot of fun, with lots of cool characters. This, even though everyone is dead and is just a skeleton. I have to tell you about this one scene, spoilers be damned. At the end of the first year, Manny, the main character, gets to Rubakava, a city partway on the way to the next afterlife. He gets a job mopping the floor in a diner, and the camera zooms out and looks at the sky. Then the words appear 1 year later, and we zoom back in on the diner, now transformed to a nightclub called Calaveras, and Manny is standing on a balcony in a white suit. Apparently now he owns the place. This may be the coolest moment in a game filled with cool moments. Some of the puzzles in this game are awful, and I got stuck quite a lot. Also, it's divided into four parts, and on the second part, I spent most of my time in the game. Rubakava is huge as adventure game places go, and I actually got lost walking around the city. When I finally found my way back to the club, there were places I had been to that I couldn't remember how to get to. I think if I'm thinking of the same spot, I think I know exactly what you're talking about, Father Beast. And yeah, I hate it when it's too confusing and too big to figure out where to go. Still, I think it was enjoyable overall, and the story and the characters are worth the headaches of fighting the game for. I recommend it. I might even go back and replay it. Still listening, Father Beast. Father Beast, thank you as always.
Yes, absolutely.
We got one more. This one's from Chase the Night Cleaner. He says, hello, gentlemen. Chase the Night Cleaner here with another one of these emails. I hope today's show is going well. I got really distracted the other day when I remembered that Paul Rudd was in one of the first Super Nintendo commercials, the one that ended with "Now you're playing with power." I don't know who Paul Rudd is. Should I know this? I feel like
Paul Rudd hasn't aged in 30 years. That's actually incredible. Yeah, Paul Rudd's pretty notable actor.
Paul Rudd. Should know him. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know Paul Rudd personally.
He hasn't aged in like 40 years.
Yes, since then. Exactly. Like, kind of like Rob Lowe.
Yep, or Jennifer Aniston.
This commercial got me thinking about all the video game commercials that I could remember and really feel like the Final Fantasy VII TV spots are some of the best advertising that ever got aimed at me. Though the Super Mario Brothers 3 commercial, I think he means the movie, just kidding, where all the children in the world wear different colored shirts in order to make Mario's face visible from orbit, deserves an honorable mention. I mean, game trailers don't work on me as much anymore because I'm older and I've witnessed dozens, if not hundreds, of games at this point that just didn't live up to the hype. In fact, I've noticed in some cases the same standard can be applied to cinema and films. I don't want to make your podcast too political, but feel free to compare the Rise of Skywalker final trailer to what was actually provided in the film. Which would you rather watch, and which was actually more powerful in its delivery? I didn't watch the trailer, so I can't answer that, and I can guarantee Jay doesn't have an answer to that one.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sorry, I haven't watched the trailer of the movie. Not my cup of tea.
And that brings me to my question of the day. Can you think of an example of advertising and gaming that really lived up to the hype other than Final Fantasy VII or Super Mario Brothers 3? I can't think of any advertisements.
I'm trying to think what really sold me. I used to get Game Informer a lot, but I don't know. I honestly, for me, like, the big thing, especially growing up, and I'm sure you probably felt the same way, the big thing for me that drew me into older games was the box art. When I was at Blockbuster, if I picked up a game that I was like, oh, this cover art's interesting, and then I looked at the back for a while, I'd be like, eh, this game looks like it's whatever, like, not a big deal. But there were some box art that definitely drew me in. I don't remember commercials really drawing me in too much over the years. There are definitely some now, I will say, the thing that drives me nuts, this is one I complain about, not really Steam, but just kind of marketing for video games in general. The big thing for me is when you watch a video for a game and they don't show you the freaking gameplay. Like, they show you all those cutscenes and the music and the title art and the zoom in the characters. Like, bro, show me the gameplay. I don't give a crap about any of this. I want to know if I want to play the game. And then it drives me nuts. I'm like, just show me the gameplay. Just show me the gameplay. That's all I'm here for.
That is, I do not get it. I know we've talked about this before. I can't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or not, so apologies if we're retreading the same ground. But yeah, I don't get it. I do not get it. How can you be in 2021 and not have realized we don't give a shit about, like, the backstory or the cutscenes, the intro? Show me the gameplay. I want to know what I'm playing.
Yeah.
It's awful. I do not understand how developers don't get that yet.
I don't either. It's crazy to me. And maybe we're wrong. Maybe it works. I don't know. But I will tell you, it is the most.
I don't know. I don't think. I've read people who have done kind of like not really in depth research, but like I've actually read people who have done some degree of research on it. And it suggests exactly what you and I were saying. People, when they look at a trailer, they skip around to find the gameplay footage.
It drives me nuts. Like, it's just like, show me the gameplay. That's all I'm here for. Just show me the gameplay.
But I'm like you. A lot of my game buying was based on either I played the game at a friend's house and I was like, I got to have this, or like looking at the box art.
Yeah, 100%.
And I got burned by obviously you can get burned by that, you know, as well. But that was how I did it. One that really stands out to me was Zardion for Super Nintendo, Xardion. If you pull it up, like, the box art looks amazing. Even the screenshots look amazing, but it was just such a dull game. Finishing Chase's email. For me right now, I recall really liking the World of Warcraft celebrity commercials, which were really pushing the series years after release. What are these?
There was one they did in particular, which was with Mr. T. It was like this really big campaign they did in like 2008, 2009, maybe it was a couple years later. I'm not sure, but there were a ton of celebrities who played WoW throughout the years. Unsurprisingly, like, it's the list of celebrities who have played WoW is actually kind of crazy. Mr. T did this thing where he played a Night Elf character, but he called it, he played a Night Elf Mohawk instead of saying like a night elf rogue or night elf warrior or whatever. And so they actually made an in-game item called like the night elf mohawk, and they gave you a mask so you could look like Mr. T in-game. It was just one of those, they did like this series with all these celebrities, and it was very successful, was my understanding.
Cool. It wasn't like cringy, because seeing World of Warcraft celebrity commercials, that sounds awful.
It was at first, and then when they started doing more and more of it, it started to become like understanding that all these celebrities were actually into playing WoW. I was like, oh, okay. Like, WoW all exploded at this time, so it was like such a breaching game that it was like, okay, it was authentic. Like, it definitely was a little bit uncomfortable at first, but it felt pretty authentic at a certain point.
Okay.
Yeah.
He says these were really pushing the series. At that point, there was just so much you could do if you just jumped in and had never played before, and the grandiose scope of it all seemed really fitting with these little ridiculous endorsements. The recent Final Fantasy 14 are a close second for me, as they are quick, funny, and also kind of intriguing. I don't even know what Final Fantasy 14 is he's talking about. He says, and that's it for me. Thank you for this wonderful section of your show and all that you do. Cheers and talk to you soon. Chase the Night Cleaner. P.S. I found these two commercials that I didn't even know existed, and it turns out Squaresoft is the maker of the world's greatest games. Jay, I'll share these with you afterward. Chase, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chase.
Yeah, I don't have any great examples, because I guess I just can't remember many advertisements of games and stuff like that.
That didn't work, right?
Huh?
It didn't work, apparently.
Yeah. Jay, I know you got to go. Any current gaming subcast stuff you want to talk about?
I'm trying to think of anything else I'm playing right now. Still playing Icewind Dale, playing some Heroes of Might Magic 3 again. Sorry, I know I've talked about the game a lot, but I love that game to death. I was watching Jay play it, Gaming Jay. I was watching him play it on his YouTube channel. Uh-huh. And I'm like, now I got to play again. Like, why do we have to talk about this game? So I've been spending some time on that, but nothing super extensive.
Gotcha.
How about you?
I finished Resident Evil Village.
Oh, cool. What'd you think?
Oh, man. I'm not exaggerating. This is one of the best AAA games I've played in a long time.
I'm trying to get Lisa to buy it because I think she'll really like it.
it's really... I could go on forever about how good this game is. I feel like it's balanced perfectly. The game feels great. I feel like even the horror of it is balanced well. It's not like... It's not so scary that it makes you just dread playing it, you know? It's not like Amnesia, where it's like you got to get yourself in the right mind space to just launch the game. It's got scary moments. It's got like good, nice. It's got really good jump scares, but it's not just constant. And you don't just have this constant feeling of dread. It's like watching a horror movie. It's like you can enjoy the whole thing, and you're gonna get scared a few times, but overall, it's still it's a fun experience overall. It has like extremely memorable characters. Even the shopkeeper. Have you seen the shopkeeper in this game?
Is this the one I keep quoting? Oh, No.
The shopkeeper is great. Lady Dimitrescu, or however you say her name, she's fantastic. Heisenberg, who's one of the bosses, is awesome as well. It just has so much character. The combat is good. The parts in between the combat is good. The puzzles are good, but not too difficult. The monsters, like I said, they're scary. They're interesting. They're unique. Just, I could go on forever about how good, like, this is. I haven't played a Resident Evil game since Resident Evil 4. Something about this looked interesting to me, so I was like, I'll give it a shot. And like I said, one of the best just AAA games in general that I can remember playing in recent time. Big recommend. And then real quick, I won't talk about it. We talked about it a long time ago. I went back to a game that I know you like a whole lot. Cuphead.
Oh yeah. I saw you play that on Nintendo Switch or on the Switch Live thing.
Yeah. It was, I never beat it originally when I played it. I got, you know, I think I got to the beginning of the third island or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
And that was when I stopped, and I probably just started playing other stuff. But I played it all the way through this time, and it's still such a great game. Halfway, the music's great. Of course, the biggest thing is the art. The art is more than art is probably 60% of why I love the game so much. And of course, it's, you know, the gameplay itself is very difficult, but also, you know, pretty. It gives you a really rewarding feeling when you beat the bosses.
Yeah.
So great game. I'm happy that I finally beat it, And
are
yeah,
you gonna
from am I gonna do what?
Are you gonna play on the harder difficulty now?
No, no, I'm good. I've gotten my fill. Time to move
it's
on
brutal.
To other
it's
things.
Absolutely brutal.
Oh, I'm sure, dude. Well, I real quick, Resident Evil Village. I was checking out, seeing what people were saying about it on Reddit and stuff before I bought it.
Yeah.
I saw a thread where people were complaining that the brutal difficulty was too difficult.
I love people like that.
Like, what the? Like, yeah, exactly. I love people like that. Like, what do you think? I was like, what am I reading? I felt like I was the crazy one.
She's playing Maddening in Three Houses, and which is the hardest difficulty, and it's called Maddening. And I love listening to her rage about it because it's just so ridiculously punishing and difficult. It's like that. Like if somebody was like, "Oh, this is so stupid. Why don't they make this easier?" It's like it's called Maddening. Like, what? Do you know what this phrase means?
Play on the regular difficulty.
Yeah, that's funny.
All right. Well, I think that's gonna wrap us up. Jay, thank you for working out the time.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate the flexibility as always.
Oh, I'm sorry. Real quick, Jay, we got to figure out if possible when the next episode is going to be since it's game of the quarter so we can let people know. I know you're going to be busy with World of Warcraft, but if you can pull away at some time in June to do this episode, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Do you want to aim for like maybe the last Tuesday of the month, like the 29th?
Would it be possible to do the 22nd or is that just too much? Is that just too early?
Yeah, we should both do that.
Because that's 3 weeks. That's 3 weeks from if we recorded this on Tuesday. That's 3 weeks and 1 day from today. So that would normally be the next time we would record, if that's okay with you. I don't want to force you away from World of Warcraft if it's too much. Okay, then let's plan on June 22nd.
That's too much. I appreciate you.
June 22nd for Game of the Quarter, Icewind Dale 2. Play it if you want. Email us your thoughts about it. And otherwise, email us whatever you want to. Anyways, mail@classicgamingpodcast.com. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Sorry if we started to feel a little bit rushed at the end, but we wanted to make sure we got this episode out before World of Warcraft comes out. Otherwise, it would have been much more rushed. So, that's all. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will see you guys in 3 weeks for Game of the Quarter.
Take care. Happy Memorial Day.
Bye, everyone.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.